Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. New episodes every Sunday and Wednesday. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing on this fine day?
Oh, Chris, as you well know, I've just run up the stairs to do the show after we tried to start the show, and I was really excited to see if you were going to get the intro right. Turns out you did.
I did.
And then a man came to the door from, where's he from? He's from, I can still see him, Brandon Hire Station. A little plug for Brandon Hire Station there. I hired a rotating petrol-powered metal brush thing. To
what?
Clean the weeds out of the nooks and crannies on my driveway. So wow. I am downright amazed, Chris, what a company for a decent outlay will rent me. I could rent a pneumatic drill if I wanted. I could rent any number of very dangerous tools. And that's what I did at the weekend.
I must admit, I brush me
flags.
Terrified at the prospect of you with a pneumatic drill. You holding a samurai sword is one thing, but a pneumatic drill, that's just chaos unleashed, isn't it?
Yeah, that was last week, wasn't it? Was it during the show the samurai sword arrived?
Did you start unboxing it? Yeah, I think you unboxed it, didn't you? How did you get on? Was it fun?
Oh, it's a lovely little bit of merchandise. I know they sent you a picture, but it's a nice little samurai sword.
Oh, I'll have I'm to still waiting on it.
I'll stand in the garden like some kind of film star.
I feel like I deserve a samurai sword because the Born Japan channel, right? Can't believe it. We're going to hit 2 million subscribers in the next few days.
Hey.
Unless something terrible happens, which probably will happen. But
unless you get cancelled.
Yeah.
Unless I tell everyone what you're really like.
Exposed. I think you get like a little placard with a kind of play button once you hit 100,000 subscribers, and then you get another one when you get a million. And I don't know where the million one went. In fact, I don't even think I got it. Like, I applied for it and then it just didn't arrive. And the 100,000 one is in a shed somewhere in the UK. But I feel 2 million is a key number, and they should take it up a notch and get me a sword with the Abroad Japan logo and brand name ingrained into the blade itself, which I can wield.
Did they is it the one that's got like, it's like a lozenge sort of shape, like a metallic lozenge that's silver or gold and stuff like that? Because I remember the guy who cuts things up, he decided to, when he got so many subscriptions, he cut a lot of things up. Like he cut the actual award itself up.
Oh God, that's bad.
He had to. He had no other option. It's quite sad, really.
It's got to do what his brand's all about, isn't it? He's up for cutting stuff, but I don't know where mine's gone. I really should take better care of it. People wear it with such pride. People have it on the wall and all this, but YouTube, being successful on YouTube isn't about winning awards or anything. It's about, you know, making good videos, I think. So that's
about an excuse to eat family chicky.
Exactly. That's right, Pete. It certainly is. I've just got back from British Hills, a British theme park, actually, with Ryotaro, where I stuffed myself with fish and chips and a full English breakfast that was not that bad. They still didn't nail that, but the fish and chips were good. I don't know if I told you, but I think we talked about on the podcast a few months ago how I tried to film in British Hills, and it didn't work out. For whatever reason, the folks at British Hills didn't want some random British guy turning up and filming it with a camera. Somehow Ryotaro got in for his bloody channel, Ryotaro's Japan, through a friend. So I went as a humble cameraman instead of actually making something good.
So will we see it on your channel at all?
It'll be on the incredible channel, Ryotaro's Japan, out sometime the next few weeks. He's already had one lackluster video out in the last week where he reacts to an Abroad Japan video. It was awful. Did you see it? Did you see this atrocity?
I did. I was washing it up, and I did see it. I will say some of the jokes sound like they've been translated into five languages and then translated back again. And I'm sure he'd be the first to admit it.
It's just his schema. It's certainly interesting, isn't it?
The fact the whole point of the thing was him watching your video, and then he just gets bored halfway through and starts watching something else.
typical Ryotaro. But we did I think we did a good job of British Hills, and I think that'll be a fun video. It's just utterly surreal because it's in the mountains of Fukushima in this very remote place, because they wanted it to feel like the Scottish Highlands and be like this kind of remote Highlands Scottish retreat. They've got a castle that looks remarkably like Leeds Castle in Kent, and they've just got this like little village. And to their credit, it's entirely staffed by British people and a few other folks from like Canada and America and other English speaking countries. But there were so many British people. I've never met so many British people in one room in Japan. It was quite surreal. And they already knew.
Is that their main job? Is it their main job? Or is it? Okay. I see.
Yeah, they do classes, they do calligraphy. Some of them run the pub. That's the best job, admittedly. it was really quite impressive. I'd love to go back and make a good video. Not that I'm saying Ryotaro's Japan isn't good, but I'd like to go back again, actually, and give it another go.
Is this how I get my visa? Is this how I get to visit? I get a job in England Hills, where it's called British Hills.
What role would you go for there if you got a job at British Hills?
I'd be the local copper looking out for ne'er-do-wells and problem people. I would.
Like Dick Van Dyke.
What's going
on
here then, I'd say? Yeah, exactly. I'd just walk around tasing people, macing them.
You could do some samurai sword lessons, couldn't you? You could do a sword fighting class.
A real British Bobby's samurai lesson. Watch out, everyone. I'm going to be swinging this right knife around like proper naughty.
That would be unspeakably dreadful. But yeah, it's really cool. I also had another video go up as well about eating bear meat with the old Aomori bears. I was quite happy, actually. There was no backlash, because I expected that people, you know, with certain exotic meats, people do get a little bit angry. I remember a few years ago, I did the video where we ate horse meat, and a lot of people hit the roof, and I got a lot of hate mail. But then I guess people have horses as pets, don't they? And they ride them around, and they have that strong bond. So, yeah, I can understand.
Fewer people have bears for pets, and if they are, they're problematic.
Yes.
Problematic circus owners.
I've only seen a few videos in Russia where people have a bear as a pet. Mm. It seems pretty rare. So, luckily,
I was watching
no
a video
backlash.
This morning. No. Mm. Well, look, I mean, you sort of dealt with it on the video itself quite well. The meat itself looked very, very fatty. It did look quite nice. You said it was quite chewy, but it did look really, really lovely.
Yeah, it was a bit like exceptionally chewy meat. It was all right. I don't know if I'd want it again. I'd much rather have the braised kind of sashimi deer, the raw meat deer. That was really good. And the boar was good. But it was really cool. It was called a hunter omakase, which it was kind of like, omakase means like a chef selection, right? So it was a selection of exotic meats that huntsmen in the local area go out and get. And it was in West Aomori, with a lot of forests and things where there are traditionally hunters. So I guess that was kind of nice. Like the bears that they do eat, they don't, they're bears that have been harassing the town, going up and causing mayhem, and they have to unfortunately put them down, some of them, and so they eat them rather than waste them. So I guess that makes sense. It's good that they're hunters, but they're doing it for actual reasons other than just killing animals for fun, if that makes sense, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of my terrible Cockney accent, I mean, I would love Danny Dyer's Naughtiest Bears. Danny Dyer's Naughtiest Bears. I'm here in Aomori to see some proper canisters.
How would you...
We've got to get some and chomp on their bones.
How would you describe Danny Dyer to people that aren't from the UK?
Him? It's kind of difficult. He's like a fake hard man, isn't he, really?
Fake
I'm trying
hard
to think who,
man.
Like... Yeah, a bit like
London Cockney.
Who got in America? Yeah, proper London Cockney, proper sort of. Who's the guy who does? Is Buddy Velastro the cake boss? He is like a tough New Yorker, isn't he, or New Jersey man? I've never seen that show in my life, but I used to announce it on DMAX Discovery Channel. And so, yeah, maybe it's that, like a tough talking, no nonsense guy who every now and again goes to Eastern Europe to film documentaries about gangs.
Yeah. I saw one episode where he got punched in the face, like one of the gang guys was like, let me hit you in the face. And Danny Dyer was like, all right, go on, you do it. You go on, mate, hit me in the face. And he hits him in the face. And he like, then he gets knocked out and he starts crying. And it felt like justice. We've got a story of the week from Riley from Canada, a place called Canmore. Oh, I've never heard of Canmore. Whereabouts is Canmore, Pete? Share us.
Sounds a bit Scottish.
Knowledge.
Canmore?
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. Canmore.
Sounds a bit Scottish, doesn't it? Yeah.
But Riley received a gift, and the gift came covered in some rather bizarre Japanese English. It begins, "Hey, fellas. So I've become something like pen pals with my Japanese friend's mother. We FaceTime every week, and she practices her broken English, and I practice my broken Japanese. She knows I love Japan, so she sent me a bunch of gifts for Christmas. All the gifts were awesome and made me extremely happy to get a bit of Japan this year, as obviously we can't go and get it ourselves. As I was putting the gifts back into the bag it came in, I noticed on the bag some pretty bloody funny Japanese English. I explained why this was so funny to my Japanese friend, but she didn't understand at all. Anyway, here's what it said. The bag says Obatash on it, which is, I think, the name of the bag brand. And underneath Obatash, it says, 'All clothes belongs to mine. Be fabulous. Swing it all the way.'" And that, what? Swing it all the way. What is that all about? Thank you, Riley, for that rather bizarre English. "All clothes belong to mine. Be fabulous. Swing it all the way." It feels like a concoction of three rather bizarre, unrelated sentences on the side of a bag. Why was that appropriate, Pete? What are they getting at?
I mean, it's three very different sentiments, I'd say. "All clothes belong to mine." That's very, like, you know, all your base belong to us kind of thing. "Be fabulous." Look, I can sort of certainly appreciate that sentiment. "Swing it all the way." If you're walking up and down the high street, walking through Harajuku or something, you do not want to be swinging your Obatash canvas bag into someone's noggin, quite frankly. So it's an interesting bit of Japanese English that I think we can all get behind.
I think the idea of "all clothes belong to mine," is that? No, I don't know what they're getting at, to be honest. I don't.
Shot
and it's difficult. It's difficult trying to explain these kind of weird sentences to Japanese friends. Like recently, I've been helping Natsuki
with his products for his business, and he just comes up with some of the most ridiculous names that make no sense. Like, he wanted to get a spray for – like, he sells these products in his shop, right, his own products.
Mm.
And he often comes to me with brand names in English because it has that element of prestige, right, having it in English.
Mm.
But the words are just don't make sense. For example, one of the sprays he was developing, you put on your face and it gets rid of wrinkles, and he wanted to call it Bounce Spray. And I tried to explain why that just sounds mental, like some sort of trampoline cleaning fluid. But he didn't get it. He was just like, oh, you know. It took me 20 minutes to convince him that Bounce Spray was a bad idea. What do you reckon, Pete? Bounce Spray. Did you get it?
Look, it's not the stupidest thing. You know, oil of ole just sounds ridiculous. But how is Natsuki allowed to, you know, create bathtub beauty products? Why is that? Like, I trust him with a pair of scissors, fine. There's a technique to that. But I don't know why he's allowed. I don't know why he's allowed to you know, just create his own products. I mean, these should be, you know, managed by the government, surely. You know, you shouldn't be rubbing things on your face that Natsuki's put together. Lordy.
I would like to make a video just rubbing Natsuki's various creams and sprays onto your face and see what happens. I think they're all right. I think he gets them from like a proper qualified organization. I don't think he's just like knocking
up. Oh, he rebrands them.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you outsource it and you choose the formula and then you brand it. It's not just Natsuki in his bloody bathtub with a load of vodka and sodium hydroxide and all this stuff.
Jury's still out, mate. Jury's still out.
Time will tell. Crack out the Bounce Spray. Should get a free Bounce Spray for every listener. Every one of you guys should get some Bounce Spray. We'll make it happen. In news of the week, this week, 8 things Japanese people realized were pointless about work culture during 2020. One of Japan's biggest internet portal websites, Big Globe, asked Japanese workers, many of whom have been transitioned to telecommuting this year because of COVID, what they don't miss about their old work days. They asked, during 2020, what did you come to feel was a pointless waste of time and energy about your old work style? And the responses were collected from 1,000 people aged 20 to 69. It's quite interesting because people in Japan tend not to badmouth their workplace. When you're in the workplace, they won't badmouth it unless they're a little bit drunk. But for some reason, surveys are quite good at getting Japanese folks to actually reveal what they're thinking, their deepest, darkest thoughts. But we have a list now of these 8 things that Japanese workers tend to hate or find pointless in their environment. And number 8 is chit-chatting with co-workers. 7.4% of the 1,000 people that were questioned say chit-chatting with co-workers is something they despise and they're glad they don't have to do anymore. What do you reckon, Pete? Do you enjoy chit-chatting?
My whole life is chit-chatting, isn't it, with co-workers. You are literally my co-worker. It's very upsetting. Yeah, 7.4%. I mean, it's been almost a year now, and they're in a situation where they don't get to chat to their co-workers. I miss it. I would miss it.
I mean, yeah, I actually, when I had some crappy job, I had a really bad office job many years ago, and the work was awful. It was just looking at Excel spreadsheets, and I hate it. But the people I worked with were all really great, really fun, down to earth. And it was those pockets during the work, like chatting with coworkers, that I really enjoyed. I guess it's because in the Japanese work environment, you can't be yourself, right? Unless you've had a drink at a work party. You have to be more reserved. You can't be that opinionated unless you get on really well with your colleagues and their friends. But it's, you know, in a work environment, you have to kind of put on a facade a lot of the time. So I could get that. I get there's the pressure and obligations of working in the kind of office. Working our way down the list. And as we get to number one is the thing that most employees in Japan despise and don't miss. Number 7, though, is visiting clients' offices. That's 13%. And I guess that makes sense because you do have a lot of meetings. A lot of my friends working in Japanese companies have so many meetings and have to always travel to clients' offices. And it could just be done on Zoom in a fraction of the time and a fraction of the effort and expenses. So that kind of makes sense. And I mean, have you found that, Pete, doing the podcast instead of having to go to the office?
I don't come off well on Zoom chats. I don't come off well on remote recording, to be quite frank, even though this has literally been the show for 3 years. So it is difficult because I do find Zoom quite stilted to do find, you know, recording or having a chat, like, you know, meetings and stuff over the internet, quite difficult. I think phone is almost a little bit more natural, but I don't think I come across well, especially when I'm in one of my more animated, states of play, so to speak. So yeah, I've not enjoyed Zoom chats. They seem to sort of go on for a long time needlessly. There's the you turn up and there's the tail sniffing of like, how are you, what are you getting up to, what's going on, and it's like, just get to the goddamn conversation. I'm busy, you're busy, let's just get down to it. But obviously then there's the traveling as well, which is also a bit of a pain in the arse if you've got one meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning and one meeting at 5 o'clock in the morning, especially if you live out of town. You're sort of kicking your heels for the whole day, really.
I think the problem with all this kind of video conferencing now is my family have discovered that they can do it. And now every day, about four times, my mum or dad or gran or someone will ring me up and be like, what are you doing? I'm sitting on the sofa looking at a tree. And I'm like, I'm literally filming a podcast or a video, or I'm doing something. And it's just like, don't overuse this newfound power. Don't bombard me.
They've got their head around it, haven't they?
It's a terrible thing. Number six, business trips. 14% said they don't like business trips. They don't miss them. Number five, my office, their own office space. 14%. Number four, paper documents. 20% of all workers said they despise paper documents. They don't miss them. That's understandable, given that Japan has still failed to digitize in many ways. They are still a paper-based society. Number three, hanko stamps, the personal seals, which I also despise. 27% of workers don't miss them at all. And as we featured them a few months ago, as we mentioned, they've been phased out. They're slowly being phased out to the detriment of personal seal manufacturers, the craftsmen that make them. I suppose that's the only downside. I do feel a bit bad for all these little this kind of cottage industry, these craftsmen who carve the hanko stamp seals. But I'm glad they're gone. Number two, work-related drinking parties. Now, this is an interesting one. 31% of workers say they don't miss the work-related drinking parties. And I'm not surprised by that, because you are obligated to go out and drink a lot with your workers, sometimes every week, and they're not that fun. You have to sort of, I guess, there's a lot of trying to win favour with your boss when you go to these work parties, and you have to go and keep drinking for three or four places. Like, typically, if you go out drinking in Japan, work-related or work-unrelated, you will have to sort of go to like three or four different places. You typically go to a restaurant, then you go to a follow-up izakaya, like a kind of a pub. Then after that, you'll go to like a bar. Then after that, you might go to a hostess bar or snack bar. And then after that, you might do karaoke. And then after that, you're dead. But then after that, you've got to go to work in the morning 1 hour later. So I'm not surprised by that. I'm not surprised. What do you reckon, Pete?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think we enforced fun is always bloody tedious. But enforced if they sort of say literally 30% of the people polled just hate that in particular, surely they must be thinking, well, maybe we should just get rid of this and just improve everyone's lives. Or is it just a bit of a power trip from the bosses to insist on them? What they should do is have the drinking parties and you get the morning off to recover, because, you know, you can't function, you can't work. When you're hungover.
That's a bloody good idea. Like, you know, the amount of times I had to go out and drink and do these events, and then there'd be work the next day or something. It was horrible. And
just foolish. Yeah.
My colleagues never got hungover, even though they'd be trashed just 3 or 4 hours beforehand. They'd just magically regenerate in the office while I'll be a wreck. And they loved it, because all the masculine lads, the guys, would be like, well, Chris, yeah, drink this sake all night long, because they knew that I could drink a lot. And so they plied me with loads of sake. And then the next day, as I sat at my desk dead, they would love it, walking past me in the staff room. Damn them all. Damn them all. Number one, though, and probably not a surprise, the one thing that workers don't miss is the time spent commuting. 35% of all people interviewed said they don't miss the commute. And I'm not surprised, because most people in Japan do live in large cities, and there is a lot of commuting. And I remember years ago when I was dating a Japanese girl, she lived in Tokyo, and I went to visit her and stayed overnight. And then in the morning, she had to go to work at like 7:30 in the morning or something. And I thought, oh, I'll go with you then, and I can switch trains at Shibuya. And I got up to the station, and we're in a queue for like 25 minutes. Then we finally got on the train, and we're just wedged in. There was like a guy with a stick like those photos you see of train station staff with a stick pushing people on. They're not fake, they're real, and I experienced that. Mm. And it was so horrible. You're squeezed in so tight on these trains that you can't move your arms, right? You just can't move at all. It's absolutely right. Terrifying. And she did that every morning. So I'm not surprised that time spent commuting is number one. And I think you're probably lucky, Pete, because I don't think you've ever experienced the like crazy morning trains in Tokyo. I don't think you've experienced that, have you? On that
no, level. Never. I think the only time where I could have been privy to it, I think I just got a taxi into town because it was. Just, I just thought, I don't think the Japanese metro really needs me and my big old suitcase right now.
It's not a suitcase friendly city. It's Tokyo. People, no. I always feel bad. I hate it. Like when you travel with a suitcase on like a train, people just stare at you and kind of they do that noise where they go. I don't know what that's called. What is that noise called?
Tutting, isn't it? Tutting. Big old tut.
Tutting. Tutting. So much tutting. I hate it. But yeah, that makes sense. I suppose using a taxi feels like a cheat code when you get in somewhere like Tokyo.
It's not cheap. It's not a cheap code, I know that.
It's not cheap at all. But if you've come all that way and you're shattered, folks, get yourself a taxi and it'll be a lot more fun.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/Japan.
This week on Stakhanov.
Throughout January, Clash of the Titles are letting you pick the films being battled out on air. Already binged your way through Netflix during lockdown? Listen as Alex, Vicky and Chris rediscover and tear apart old and new favourites alike, week in, week out.
I like here, though, that Michael Bay starts as he means to go on. I made a list of sort of Bayisms from this sequence. Low angles, lens flare, dry ice, washed out colours, military hardware, men marching, orchestral score, guitar riffs.
Or if you're looking for some much-needed escapism, why not catch up with the Abroad in Japan podcast? Chris was recently joined by Joey the Anime Man to discuss mastering conversational Japanese.
That's a really interesting topic, bat channeling, which is where you kind of go,
In Japanese, if you don't do the every now and then people just think you're not listening or you're ignoring them.
All that and a whole lot more at Stakhanov.
Now we turn our attention to the fax machine. What do we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson?
We've got a message from Jeff. Hello, Jeff. Hi, Chris and Pete. I'm a big fan of the show and the YouTube channel. And apart from my homemade fermented maple syrup, hello, it's keeping me cozy and sane. I know you're a big fan of the cyberpunk genre, so much so that you've been gifted a supersized copy of the 2077 from CD Projekt Red. And I've just heard theories that an NPC Natsuki playable character says, go fuck yourself in the game. He would fit in. I think, is it Japantown in there? I had a stroll around a few weeks ago, and there's obviously a lot of Japanese characters in there. So, look, I think he'd be fine. Cyberpunk and Asian-flavoured elements are all rather synonymous for the genre and heavily influenced by Ridley Scott's Blade Runner. What are your thoughts on certain concerns regarding the possible dark history of this relationship? Some have pointed to the idea of Orientalism, the Asian as the other. During the 80s, when Japanese imports and products had direct influences on North American industries, and some groups reacted to these changes personally and oftentimes aggressively. Art can be a reaction to one's personal socio-political climate, and it's pointed that there was an underlying use of elements in this dystopia, consciously or subconsciously, that tie to oranges of Western fear of growing Asian influence on the economy and ultimately culture. Considering the current hype around 2077 and your love of cyberpunk, I'd be really fascinated to see a broader perspective on the issue. Not so wide-eyed man from Canada, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff, for your email. Big, big tings.
What do you think, Pete, first?
I imagine.
Go on, let's hear your thoughts first. I'm sure
it all sort of started in the 80s, the kind of cyberpunk. I think bookish cyberpunk was never, there wasn't that much Orientalism in it. But when it made the leap to the screen, that was very much part of it. But I mean, there's a certain level of kind of love. I mean, the use of like hiragana and katakana has never really sort of gone away. You know, the LED, the things that, you know, your Hong Kongs and your Tokyos and stuff like that. So, I completely agree. Yes, there's a heck of a lot of that. But by the time it gets to, you know, 2020, I think someone depicting and Cyberpunk gets a lot of this wrong. Some very, very weird characters in that game. But in the main, I think anybody creating, you know, Cyberpunk and using almost kind of like, you know, depictions of China, Hong Kong and Taiwan and Japan. I think it's done with a little more love than probably was back in the 1980s, where everything from Japan was regarded with a bit of suspicion. Oh, yeah, the cars were crap, the motorbikes were crap, et cetera, et cetera. But of course they weren't. They were very good.
Well, no, you've got that wrong. I'm going to call you out on that. In the 1980s, Japan was booming, right? The economy was doing extremely well, and there was a lot of anxiety in North America that Japan was going to become the new superpower. Albeit a soft.
But we have that with China now, though, don't we?
We do. But back then, Japanese imports were really kind of taking over in the US. And because the cars were reliable, like Honda and Toyota cars, which are indestructible, were taking over the American market. There was obviously electronics as well, pushing out the American kind of electronic companies. So there was a lot of fear and anxiety, I think, around Japanese companies sort of coming into the US. And so, if you look at Cyberpunk 2077, the main antagonists are Arasaka Corporation, right? Run by this Japanese industrialist, Saburo Arasaka. I think, the way Arasaka is portrayed in Cyberpunk 2077 of these antagonists is kind of comical. But it kind of fits in with the 1980s view that I think the Western world had of Japan in some respects. Like, we were kind of frightened of Japan, I think. of their dominance and whatnot, right? Which is why, but what I don't understand, yeah, I kind of understand some respects, like why people are wary of the cyberpunk genre now and all these tropes, but why do I love cyberpunk? I think it's interesting. Like a lot, I've always been interested in futurism, and what I like about the cyberpunk genre is it doesn't paint everything as this rosy, utopian, wonderful place. It feels more cynical and more grounded in reality, which I've always found exciting. And I like a movie like Blade Runner. I just love the neo-noir aesthetic. Admittedly, I don't think too deeply on it, though. I don't think about how maybe it is a bit wrong to portray Asia or Asian people in that way. I've always been attracted to the art style, and that is the thing that keeps me going back to it. But are you a big fan of the cyberpunk genre? Are you kind of, how do you feel about it? I know you're not as
I've not really sort of explored it, but you know, the films like Blade Runner were the reason why, you know, you want to visit Japan in the first place. The neon lights, the flashy visuals, and the kind of like the crumbling city below. I think it's wonderful. You know, I one of my favorite parts of the world is like Kowloon in Hong Kong, where these massive old school kind of, you know, I can't imagine what the carbon footprint is of Kowloon, but these massive signs that are just constantly just advertising products that have probably shuffled off the supply chain a very, very long time ago. But it's just these like the sort of phosphorus kind of like luminescence from the streets above you. It's just something, it's incredibly evocative. Yes, I think 2020 has given us I think this decade has given us a chance to sort of sit back and sort of go, right, what are we saying with this piece of work? What is this saying to Asian Americans or Asian British people or just Asian people in general? Is this destructive or is this constructive? You'd probably say that Cyberpunk 2077, you'd probably say that Blade Runner, the way that it depicts this neo-noir Tokyo kind of like sort of Japanese city, it probably is a little bit harmful. So yeah, you know, I think it's a real positive step to reanalyze the art that we enjoyed when we were younger. I was watching fucking Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom at the weekend.
Oh, how India is portrayed!
God, my God! Like, I'm surprised they're even playing that. I love Indiana Jones, and he's my favorite kind of superhero guy when I was a kid. But it, like, I'm surprised they were allowed to play that, because people are fucking eating monkey brains and, you know, fucking Data's a Chinese, you know, joke character. And fucking hell. It's like Mickey Rooney doing like the Japanese character half the way through. It was just awful.
I think my favorite film is a great example of that is Independence Day, right? The 1996 movie Independence Day, when they like destroy the first ship and all that. And, there's like people cheering all around the world, and it like cuts to Egypt and Africa, and there's like tribesmen with spears jumping up and down in celebration. Is that how the world is like? That is how the world was portrayed. It was rather
and not that long ago. You know, I was watching The Office US last night, and there was the episode A Benihana Christmas, where they go to Benihana and they meet some Asian women, and Michael Scott at one point. He's like drunk or something, and he can't tell them apart. So he gets something wrong, and he puts a mark on one of their arms because he can't tell them apart. And it's just like there's a lot wrong with The Office. There's a lot wrong with The Office right the way through its run. But it's weird how shocking, how quickly that's become incredibly shocking. And you know, you'll go through all the kids' films we enjoyed when we were kids, you know, from Short Circuit to what, like the bloke out of Short Circuit wasn't even Asian, like he wasn't even Indian. He was just a white guy that he'd browned up. All of these films that we loved and we cherished when we were kids, I'm surprised they're still playing them because they were so very wrong. And that's good. That's positive. It's good that we should look back even 10 years ago, even 20 years and go, right, is that good? Is that right? Should this be happening?
I still think the cyberpunk genre has a clear, you know, I still think there's space for the cyberpunk genre. Maybe some of the tropes aren't necessary. This sort of, again, I love the way that the villains, the antagonists of cyberpunk are 2077 are portrayed as Arasaka, this organization, but it's entirely fictional. And it feels quite comical, this villain, Saburo Arasaka. He's this like elderly guy who like was in World War II, and he saw how the Japanese were defeated, and he vowed revenge, and he built up this company and started to take over the world. And it's all a bit ridiculous because off the top of my head, I can't think of many evil Japanese corporations. I find corporations in Japan are actually a lot better at thinking about their place in the world and doing good, right? So I find that quite comical. But yeah, it's fictional. I think as long as they don't portray like Asian Americans negatively, and I think that was something I read about that a few Asian American community were offended by some of the things they saw in Cyberpunk 2077. I wouldn't really know, unfortunately. I still haven't played the damn game. Still waiting on a PlayStation 5.
Well, look, the big messaging of the big messaging on Cyberpunk is one of ethics and should we do stuff, and also just the idea of like society where the smallest and the poorest will always get beaten down by those in power. So there is messaging you could take. I don't think anyone's sort of saying that it's a particularly important social examination, but it certainly politically goes down on my side of things that poor people are in a cycle that they can't break out of, and it's nothing to do with them. It's not their fault, and that's something that there's some of the themes that Cyberpunk 2077 explores.
Another key theme with the cyberpunk genre is technology and the way technology impacts us, and I still think that's incredibly important, and the power that corporations wield, that's undoubtedly still incredibly important. So I think those things are key. But for me personally, the reason I love cyberpunk, the reason I love Blade Runner more specifically, which is the film that led me into the cyberpunk genre, was I just love the rich world that Blade Runner created. It's so well done. They did such an amazing job. Everyone that worked on that film, from Ridley Scott to Sid Mead, the industrial designer who created all the backdrops and made such a rich, detailed world. It felt like peering into an alternate reality, and I found that very compelling. And that is why I love Blade Runner, really. That kind of looking through a window into what they thought the future was going to be like in the kind of early 1980s, a future that turned out to be relatively different, to be honest. Japan didn't become a superpower. Of course, soon after, there was a bubble. The bubble burst. And since then, Japan's power in the world has been on the wane, particularly the electronics companies that dominated the 80s have all been kind of pushed aside one by one, in place, taken over by kind of their place in the world, pushed aside by Samsung and Apple and various other Chinese companies. So very different. And the world, of course, the first Blade Runner was set in November 2019. And it was quite weird being November 2019, thinking, oh, where's the flying cars then? Where are they, Pete? Where are they?
I wouldn't mind Decker's hair. His shitty hair he's got. I'd quite like that haircut.
I'd love that as well. Paul says, Paul from Oregon says, my story, Chris and Pete, is not Japan related, but it is podcast related. Let me tell you how Chris managed to embarrass me without even being in the same country. I was getting gas just as I pulled up to a pump. And I rolled down both my windows because I didn't know what side of the car the attendant will approach me on. Yeah, I get that. I've had that a few times. I just finished the podcast, 5 Ways to Make a Great First Impression on a Japanese Woman, podcast episode that came out last week. And as I was playing it back really loudly, Chris said the line, fuck, fuck, fuckity fuck. I was getting my credit card out my wallet, so I was slow to move on the mute button. The soccer mum in the van full of kids beside me gave me the incredible look of disapproval. you would have thought I pulled up blasting old school NWA with how much she stared daggers at me until she pulled away. Thank you for the embarrassment, Chris. A fan, Paul's. And now someone else is going to have that same situation, given I've just repeated the line in this episode as well. I don't remember saying that last week. Do you know why I said that?
I may have put the a compendium of you trying to do the intro at the end of the show.
Did you? Oh, you cheeky.
Yes. Fucking. Yeah. For the people. For the people.
For the people. By the people. We got one from Peter. Over to you.
All right, Peter says, hello, Chris and Pete. My name is Peter. Hi, Peter. I'm Peter. And I'm from Maryland in the US. First of all, I want to thank you both for all of the content you put out because it's given me and my partner hours and hours of entertainment. I, in particular, have been making my way through the backlog of podcasts during this pandemic and during my daily commute to work. It has kept me entertained and awake because I'm prone to sleepiness no matter how much sleep I get. I hear you. Maybe it's a Peter thing. I apologize if you've already answered something similar since I'm not completely done with the backlist of podcasts, but I've just wondered, what is the scariest paranormal encounter you both ever had in Japan, or anywhere for that matter, since Pete, you're not in Japan currently, but if you've had one in Japan, great. I love the episode where Chris explored the haunted Japanese inn with Risotto, and I recently rewatched it, which is what brought this question up. Thank you for everything you do. P.S. Try the Kalbi Nori Shio crisps. They are delicious. Now, Cal, I'll say it for now, Kalbi do some terrible crisps.
Oh, yes.
The ones that are like little kind of chips that they put in. It's like eating little bits of rock. It's horrible. Really too tough. They don't taste of anything. Gross.
I remember last year I had the Kalbi, what was it, salted egg flavor crisps.
Oh, yeah.
And they were just so horrible. So, you know, when you flavor crisps really badly, it ruins the crisps entirely. It was just like that. It was all just corrupted.
Disgusting.
And, gross. Yeah. I'm not a Kalbi fan. And Nori Shio, salted seaweed, is just, can't be doing with it. As for the most haunted, most scariest paranormal encounter you've ever had in Japan, the video that Peter brought up there, the haunted inn, which Ryota and I visited almost a year ago this week in North Iwate Prefecture. There's a, it was an inn with a little ghost boy, right? There was a boy that's been there for like 500 years and, we didn't really see anything scary. It had a bit of a haunted, creepy vibe going on. They leave all the lights on really low at night so you can sort of go around and look for the ghost. But there was a bird that fell off the shelf randomly, like a little toy bird fell off the shelf. And that was a little bit weird. I wouldn't say I was scared, though. I was more scared of Ryotaro snoring at night than the boy. Don't ever share a room with Ryotaro. It's not fun. It's horrible. I used to work at a castle, and a lot of my colleagues felt it was haunted and tell me stories of how they saw like a child running around under tables and they heard like a dog barking. I didn't see anything, but I must admit, even though I'm not a paranormal, I don't believe in the paranormal, walking around a castle at night is still pretty daunting, like a giant old castle from 600 years ago.
Nobody likes that.
Nothing for me. What about you, Pete? Anything paranormal?
No, not particularly paranormal. I remember being spooked out of my face by when we went to the Rabbit Island or something.
Rabbit Island?
What it's called. Remember Rabbit Island where there's just rabbits everywhere? And you give them biscuits and Okunoshima.
Yeah,
there's like a look, because obviously the rabbits were released at the end of the World War because they were doing tests on them for weaponry. Obviously there's just a load of like abandoned kind of rooms and bases and underground little bomb shelters and stuff. And there's walking through some of those that have just been left to the to the elements. It was really, really spooky. Did not care for that one bit.
Yeah, that island's pretty trippy. I remember just arriving on Rabbit Island, and I made a video, if you missed it, guys. I made it, I think, six years ago. It's near Hiroshima. It's about an hour and a half outside of Hiroshima, and you get a ferry, and you arrive on the island, and there's like two signs. The first sign, pointing left, is like, rabbits, go and see the rabbits. And the sign on the right just says, chemical weapons facility. And it's just like, oh, what happened here then? But that's quite sinister, isn't it? The old chemical, the rabbits that are involved in the tests.
Yeah.
Sounds like something out of a cyberpunk film. Chemical, Japanese chemical rabbits.
Awful.
Yeah, it's pretty trippy. And the empty abandoned buildings are pretty weird as well. Would you recommend visiting it, though, to our listeners, Pete?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well worth. If you can get there, it's a bit tricky to get to because it's not quite on the train line. But, well worth a peek. Brilliant stuff, that.
Yeah, get yourself to Rabbit Island, folks. It's arguably better than Cat Island in Miyagi Prefecture because Cat Island has a lot of cats, but it doesn't have a haunted, abandoned chemical weapons testing facility. Keep the comments, questions, stories coming in to brawnjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back on Sunday to do it all over again. But for now, guys, enjoy the rest of your week and we'll see you right back then on Sunday to do it all over again. Have a good one.
was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.